This is RSVNB Update, episode 597, recorded Thursday, December 8th, 2016, on the 15th year of Christmas. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update. Joining Mr. Bistro and myself this week is Dave. You guys will remember him from Q2 of 16. Welcome back.
Hello, hello.
So, both of you guys are here this week. We're well into December, and we're kind of getting a glimpse at what Jagex's month ahead looks like. It's going to be Christmas and Sliskay's Endgame of the two things that are going to be released this month. So,
and that's it.
And, well, I mean, it turns out that Endgame is actually now slated to come out on the 19th of December, which, you know, that's just the perfect, that's the most perfect timing they could have done for this, given the fact that, you know, we're trying to wrap the podcast up and, you know, less than a week away is Christmas Day, and typically it's very hard to schedule podcast recordings and other things in the last week before that, and given the schedule, it's going to be a really interesting time, and you know, it kind of threw the rest of the month's schedule into the ringer, so to speak. So we're working through that, and I will not be surprised if I spend one day in that last week podcasting for about 6 hours, probably, based on the way things are going to go. So that's likely the way things are going to happen, but you know, quests are always great, so we got to focus on those when they happen. But this week we got part one of the Christmas quest. They're calling it Frost World this year, and this year they have taken the unusual step of allowing people to visit past Christmas events. So before we get too far into discussing the actual mechanics of these, what were your guys' first thoughts when you saw past Christmas events?
Well, the first thing that came to my mind was, all right, what are they buying time for? Like, I sort of got the feeling it was kind of a fallback, not to discount the idea, because I feel like a lot of the holiday events in general have sort of deteriorated over the years. So my initial thought was, you know, they're trying to fall back on something, put a twist on stuff they've already done, and hopefully hit us with something big and, I guess, different. Next year, but I'm interested to see what this is all about nonetheless. So
yeah, and you know, of course, the big thing in December is Sliskay's Endgame, so there's that. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I actually think that this fits into the theme to close out the year, it's the 15th year anniversary stuff, to actually go back and do past events. I think it's perfect. Yeah. And whether they're buying time for things or not, I think it was the right decision to make, and frankly, I enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, you initially log in and you think that you're just going to be replaying the events exactly as they were all these years ago, but there are subtle little differences along the way, and I mean, you might not pick up on these if you've never done them before. If you did them, you know, maybe in a rush when they initially came out, you might not pick up on them. But for all intents and purposes, these events released this week are relatively the same as what we saw released in previous years. So basically, as it turns out, what happens is you take the Christmas portal either in Priftinus. You can access it through your holiday event portal. There's also Christmas cupboards you can enter in Lumbridge, Burthorpe, and Varrock. That'll take you to Santa's area. And then, you know, it's very reminiscent of the 15-year anniversary event. I'm glad you said that earlier, because the cupboards are also, there's another set of cupboards inside there that are in the exact same layout as we saw earlier in the year with the actual 15-year event, where you're going to be able to go into some of these. So you use these cupboards to access the past events, so that's kind of what they're alluding to here. And the ones we got this week are Land of Snow from 2007, O Little Town of Damenheim from 2010.
Yeah,
you like that one, don't you? And A Towering Feast from 2011, which is the recipe for disaster kind of Christmas event set in the old Wizard's Tower, believe it or not. So that's what you can play through this week. I'm not going to go through too much of the mechanics of each of these unless there's anything jumping out at you guys.
No, not particularly.
Yeah, because, I mean, the vast majority of you guys listening will have played through these before, so it's not anything brand new. There's just little changes along the way. I won't spoil too many of them, but for example, in O Little Town of Damenheim, you end up having a bottomless backpack, and when you reach your hand in, things don't exactly work as you expect them to. So those are the kind of little things you can look out for in these events that's different than the first time when you did them.
I wonder if they're not allowed to call it a bag of holding.
Oh, a what?
A bag of holding.
Why?
Because those are pretty much endless, and they're from D&D.
Oh, okay, I had no idea. See, I'm not sure. I've never done
that. A
little
bit of a copyright issue there.
Potentially.
Okay, I see. Didn't they have a bottomless bag in Harry Potter or something as well once upon a time?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not like it's not an old trick or anything like that. But I want to talk about A Towering Feast from 2011. If you guys don't want to talk about Little Town of Damenheim or Land of Snow.
Nope, go for it.
Okay. you know, this one, I think, perhaps has the potential to bring most of us back to somewhere we can't access in-game currently, and that's the old Wizard's Tower, because this is an exact copy of the old Wizard's Tower, and it kind of makes you appreciate either the old style of architecture in RS or the new style from when they updated it, because, you know, the current Wizard's Tower is so grand and tall, and this one is basically a little house on a peninsula island. So it's an exact copy of the old Wizard's Tower, and, you know, you think, oh, what is this? And then you get in there and you remember exactly where everything is, and then how to do the little thing in the basement that's putting on the holiday event, the snow in the Wizard's Tower, so to speak. So I think that this one probably had the strongest reaction going back, because this is actually an area that we can't currently access in-game today. So that was my thoughts on that one. I don't know if you guys had any similar thoughts.
I think it was really nice to be able to go back to that, too. It's not something that I expected. I almost thought that they would almost redo that portion in the new tower.
Yeah, yeah. But then that wouldn't be true to the content now, would it?
Mm-mm.
So. Right, and coming from the, I guess, the recent habit, if you want to call it that, of Jagex liking to rework everything, Wizard's Tower included, it is a, I guess it's sort of a backwards way of seeing it as refreshing that they preserved it. You know, if you're going back to do content, I think the point of it is not to rework it, but to obviously preserve it. So I'm glad that they stuck with that.
Yeah, and for this. And, you know, we can go into the whole old school RuneScape thing here. Should old school RuneScape have been preserved as a time capsule like this?
Right.
That's definitely the way I felt about it. So, I mean, there is a certain argument to be made for that after 15 years of RuneScape, right? So,
yep.
I mean, maybe, but I guess the 15-year celebrations are over, so perhaps maybe for the 20th anniversary we'll see something like that, more of a time capsule kind of effect. So for rewards, you're probably wondering, what do you get for doing this? Well, the reason I think they're doing this is because, you know, 2007... That was, you know, we're coming up 10 years on that, and there's going to be people who are playing RS today who wouldn't have been playing it back then, so how are they going to get all these rewards for these Christmas events? Well, this is exactly how you get it. In addition to this year's rewards, which include an ice staff, shield, bow, and sword override, you also receive the snow globe from the 2007 event, as well as the snow drobe emote, as well as all the past Christmas emotes that you would have received while doing these events. So you can pick up everything on this.
I was really happy to be able to get the snow globe because I didn't get that.
Yeah, see, there you go. There's also a 2016 snowboard that you can pick up from the exact event itself. And rather than, you know, just having dead content in these areas after you do it, for the duration that the event is in-game, you're going to be able to go back and access some skilling nodes. So in the Land of Snow, you're going to be able to do snowman building, which gives you construction and magic or ranged or melee experience. And this is, of course, based on how you have your combat set up in-game. The seal sliding in the Heimland games gives you agility and dungeoneering XP. And then enchanted Christmas pudding catching in the old Wizard's Tower will give you cooking experience. So interesting that you can go back and take part in all these. I just have one complaint about this, and that is that this entire area is instanced, meaning you go in and you're by yourself. You're just getting all this XP, and there's going to be
which, in my
no
opinion, sort of takes away from the whole atmosphere of the event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because you'll remember in the area, in the Santa area where we were doing the snowman building when the event first came out in 2007, that was a social area that you could go to, and there would be people around you that would also be taking part in that. So that kind of takes an element away from it. And I know there's also, going back to the 2014 event in the Lumbridge Crater with the whole snowscape that was set up there, there was also a nice community feeling there as well that you could take part in. And the fact it wasn't instanced, and unless something is coming in 2 weeks, we currently don't have anything like that for this year's event, aside from the reindeer racing, which we talked about last week. So that is something, in my opinion, that's missing.
I think we might see it again. There's definitely a lot more, or a couple other events that have the opportunity to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
For instance, like the snowball fighting in the crater.
Yeah, that would be really good. I would love to see that come back. So now, do you guys think that in 2 weeks' time we're going to see the rest of the past holiday events come through?
I would think and hope so. I think it's a general consensus that you know, the 2005 Varrock Christmas tree event was pretty much the best event that they've really done.
That and the scarves and the
and the marionettes and all that.
Marionettes and the hats. I think that
if anything, I think that
would
be the last one they release, kind of like the big finale or the encore.
That's
because you know, keep people playing until you know they get their favorite one.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the, because it seems kind of weird for them to just release like the scattered ones like 07 and then 11, you know. So I think they're going to kind of pepper it throughout the December, kind of like winter weekends. So we'll get to play each one rather than dumping, you know, like all 10 or all 15 of them on us at once. So
yeah, and I mean, I don't think they'll put all 15 in it, and you know, in some ways that's why I'm a little bit concerned, is because I want to make sure that you know, I think we all agree that the 05 event is probably the best one that there was. So I
didn't play the 05
and
one,
see,
so
that's
I'd
exactly
really
why you
like
want
the
those to come back, right? And I think those are some of the best looking Christmas rewards that they put out, just because they fit so well on your character. So fingers crossed that we'll see something like this. And I mean, like, you can still go back down to that workshop underneath Diango's house, but of course nothing happens there. So I mean, the assets are still there. There's no reason not to do it. So that's definitely one we're hoping for. So 05. Now let's assume they're going to choose three other ones. Which other ones do you think they should put in?
Gosh, what was the one where you went to, you helped with the big feast or whatever in Snowland? I forgot what that was.
That's already in there, the Towering Feast.
11. Oh, was that it?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, it had like the mulled wine and all that?
No, not that one.
I think that was a couple years
ago. Yeah, that was a couple years ago.
Okay.
They should bring back the one with Jack Frost and...
All right.
With the snow imps and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are the main ones that I remember, so I guess for what it's worth.
Anyone for Estrella in the Manger? That was
that
the 2012
rings
event.
A bell, but I can't recall what happened in that.
That was the 2012 event. a pet stray dog. You basically help them get back to home, and then you ensure people receive their Christmas wish with that by helping the snow imp do that. So that was a kind of a wintry one, but not a full Christmas theme. A Christmas warble. That was the candy cane.
Don't know
year.
That one at all.
Don't recall. No.
Okay. That was with the dramatic point emote. That was 2009. 2008 was the Myths of the White Land, which was actually a quest, believe it or not.
Was that with the Queen of Ice?
That was with Explorer Jack, right?
I believe so. Yes, Explorer Jack, and that's when you got the Santa suit, 08. I think now
that would be a good one.
Yeah, I think 05, 08, because that kind of completes the outfit, and I think that's what people wanted. And if you guys remember, I'm gonna open this old wound here from when Power to the Players first came out. They said past holiday events rewards for loyalty points. And that update never happened. The poll came and went, and it was never spoken of again on stream or anywhere. So I'm thinking that, you know, that kind of idea was just thrown out. So perhaps that could be something that they do. So 05, 08, and I don't know, maybe 12, for example. But that would be Stray in the Manger, so I don't think so.
No.
But we'll just have to wait until the 19th to see what arrives for that. But, you know, I came into this and I was thinking, oh, I've done all these before. Is this something that we really need to do for this event? But then you get going on and you remember how to do it and you remember, you know, the rewards that came from it. And you come to the understanding that it's not that bad. And to celebrate 15 years of RuneScape, we've been looking back all throughout the year, whether it be with the 15-year emote or the actual 15-year event that happened in January, that, you know, RuneScape has a history, and we've been appreciating that all year. So why not appreciate that with this year's Christmas event? So I think indeed. That's a good way of going about that. Anything else on the part one of this event before we move on?
Nope.
Okay, then. We did mention last week that there was no mention of the festive aura being brought into game, and
called
that,
it.
Yeah, there you go. That did come back this week with all the benefits that everyone expects. So you can use it daily for a half hour to get a 50% XP boost up to a cap of maximum of 50,000 XP earned, as well as, of course, the festive Christmas wings. Pick it up from the loyalty shop guy if you don't have it already in your bank. Yeah, you were spot on with that, calling that last week when that wasn't in-game. So
yeah, it's such a simple thing, there's no way they wouldn't include that.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, I think part of it might have been is that we didn't hit December when that update hit, so it might not have made sense to release it on that exact day, and they had to wait till the first update of December. So that would be my rationale behind it. All right, patch notes. A couple interesting ones this week. You guys ready to go?
Ready.
Let's do it.
Okay, so for those who have done Children of Ma, you'll now be very disappointed that the darkness effect used in Ma's Nightmares is no longer active when leaving the Nightmares, much like the smuggling thing last week. Another way to kind of sneak out of there with that effect. I know lots of people probably enjoy doing those kind of things. And I know you, Mr. Beaster, you like talking about the RuneScape drug experience from Vampire Quest.
You're not going to let this die.
No, I don't do that. When someone brings something up like that, it definitely has to keep coming back.
Oh, God. No, it's just, it's cool to play the game with a different kind of filter on. There's nothing wrong with a different kind of filter.
All right.
And it doesn't need to be associated to drugs.
Virago's entry hit is now capped at 12,500 for normal mode and 14,000 for hard mode. I've never done Virago before, so maybe one of you guys can enlighten me on what this is about.
When you first do Virago with your group, you all take a hit.
It's
I don't know why, it was just
a total of 50,000 that's split amongst your party, which basically puts a sort of a hard cap on it not being able to be soloed, and you need at least five players. I think it's possible with four with
All right.
boosts, but basically it's a measure to prevent people from eventually soloing it. So basically you need five people to soak up the initial damage. Otherwise, obviously, it's going to one hit you. So just by capping that, I'm assuming with all the invention perks and all the new armor and stuff that's been coming out, it's increasing it more. So they might have been able to get three players in. So probably to keep that in check, they had to tweak this a little bit. So.
Yeah, in the past, people would ask for others to like sacrifice themselves, so Virago could be duoed. So I'm guessing that this is something that just kind of has to do with that too.
Kind of a formality, yeah.
All right. In other PVM news, Araxar's web shield no longer carries over to Araxi when switching phase. That's good. I mean, because they're different entities, so it doesn't make sense that that shield effect
Right.
should carry over. Seems like something that's been in there a while. And you know, it's interesting that this was here this week when a couple of weeks ago we talked about the stomping mechanics again. So,
Yeah, I
always
mean, this
interesting to
just
see the
touches
way
on the
that
whole
works.
fact that still rubs me wrong about RuneScape and just its engine in general.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
said this before, just with how like bossing and stuff works. I think they're very limited on how the engine, in the response time, since it's on the click system rather than real time. I think this poses, opportunities such as this where, a stop mechanic might be delayed or something carries over when it shouldn't just because it was, a fraction of a tick off and, went to the new phase. But it is what it is. So I'm not going to sit here and, gripe about it, but
Oh
it's
yeah,
just
we could
interesting that
talk
they're
about tick
finally.
rate for every podcast week in existence and find things that would be messed up if they changed it, or find reasons to change it going forward.
Right.
And but I
Yeah.
mean, at this point, I don't think it's going to happen because it'd just be too much work to rebuild the game from the ground up
Oh,
since
sure,
everything
yeah. And
relies on timing.
whenever I talk about it, I'm not necessarily looking for a rebuild of the engine. I'm just thinking they need to, I think, realize the limitations of the engine and work to that. Because I think reworking the game engine would probably be more catastrophic than EOC in terms of
Oh
community
yeah.
division.
Oh yeah.
So I think they just need to realize because, they're trying to blur the lines and, some of the mechanics they've been putting in, because I've done Telos, I've done raids and stuff, and, it's less than smooth, I can tell you that much, especially if you have a computer with less than, optimum settings and specs. But anyway, that's a tangent and we can go ahead and move forward.
Yeah, well, we're gonna move forward in just a bit, and I think we'll end up coming back to that. But first, valuable contributors to the RuneScape Wiki fan site, the RS Wiki that everyone uses, may be awarded with the Wikian title. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about this. I really enjoy the RS Wiki. There's lots of great people that work on that, lots of great administrators there that we know. And I mean, it's nothing against the RS Wiki staff, but there's just something that doesn't feel right about adding a real-world reference to the game like this, like the Wiki. And what does that mean in the term in terms of RuneScape characters, right? And then the question that follows from that is, where does it end? Like, are we gonna have titles for clans next? Is it gonna be Shane1288 of RSBNB, Shane1288 of Clan Quest, et cetera, right?
Right,
So
and there's always a danger with giving awards or titles on boards like that, and we can reference RSBNB forums as well. For the longest time, it was not posted on, the post count that needed to get certain ranks because, that would
it
encourage
wasn't.
spam and just kind of random posting. And, it's sort of, you have to think about it in this case, it says valuable here, but, is this going to encourage a bunch of, random people to try to edit stuff and put in their, You know, they're input into all this stuff and sort of dilute the content, just trying to get this title and, you know.
And, I mean, it's at the discretion of the RS Wiki administrators who gets the title. I know that much.
Right.
I also know that there are potentially titles in the works for the RuneHQ users and the Tip.it users, too, depending on how they want to hand that out. So that led to the question, you know, where do we... where do we go next, and so on and so forth, right?
Ask to get our own titles.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, titles are something that are very inexpensive to do. It's probably, you know, just a list of names somewhere that gets put into the titles interface. So, like, where do we end? Do we stop at
giant
clans?
Ugly array of...
Stop at fan sites, or do we keep going to the point where people might be able to, you know, suggest titles one day through something. So
we get into streamers, and then we get into all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, and plus it just, you know, the core reason of it, aside from the administrative side, is it just doesn't make sense from an in-game perspective, because if you picture your character walking around in game, what does your character know about the wiki and what does that mean?
Right.
So,
well, I think that this and, people could argue that this might not be related that strongly, but this is a lot better than JGX handing out player mod status to a whole bunch of people like they were doing around the release of EOC time.
And before, I think they were on a kick of upwards to, I know it was in the thousands. I know there are thousands and thousands of PMods. And over time, they've been letting those lapse, and people who haven't been playing, and they've been stripping them back. So,
I think that was kind of because they went on their big crusade about saying how, you know, PMods aren't like, you know, RuneScape police. They're more of like community managers and like ambassador.
And let's
be
real,
want to get
there were people where it never worked out that way, right? There were people who treated it as the community police mad role.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, seeing that we saw a spike, you know, around EOC, I think that was their attempt. They knew the community was going to be divided, and they were trying to amass, you know, their proverbial army to sort of unite it by having these PMods. And unfortunately, most of the players that got modded treated it like the community police, and it really backfired on them. And I think that's, you know, the rest is history for sure. So.
And, you know, it's a very good point as well. And, you know, I think even from our perspective here, we could have perhaps done things a little bit differently and focused more on the positive sides of the evolution of combat rather than trying to, you know, just counter all the negative stuff, because that was another time, just kind of like those ARC episodes where week after week after week, it was a constant look back as to what was constantly being said negative about EOC and how that related to the community. So, yeah, definitely could have gone different there. And I think we can bring this back to the whole Wikian title by saying that, is this a kind of a labeling thing that JGX wants in the game? And, I mean, I don't know exactly how many of these titles are going to be out there, but if it's a sizable amount, then it's going to be visible and people are going to feel maybe some division from that. I don't know. They shouldn't, but they very well could.
Right.
But, all right. Moving forward to the future, focusing on positive aspects of the new game client, foundations have been laid to support higher resolution textures and normal maps. Also with this, an uncompressed textures option has been added. Anyone who has taken the time in looking at the various textures, you know, prime example of this is in Prif. The textures there are all relatively low resolution, and you can see the pixelation on them. So it's nice to know that now that we have the capability with the NXT client, at some point in the future, we can get true high-resolution textures, just as we have in other games. I'm really interested to see what they do with this, and I would love it if, you know, we could go back to Prif, for example, and get high-resolution textures there. Because, I mean, if you look closely at the stained glass, if you attempt to use the stained glass in the Tower of Voices as a actual piece of stained glass, you'll see the pixelization there. So it'd be nice to have high resolution textures brought in for that.
I wonder if this was something that they waited to do until more people were moving off of the Java client.
Yeah, they would have to. And, you know, I think the fact that we got a toggle now in-game for uncompressed and compressed textures tells us that the release of some uncompressed textures are imminent, probably with the release of Sliskay's endgame, if I had to take a guess. And then, of course, for updates of 2017 as well. And I would just like to remind everyone out there that if you are on the NXT client, even though NXT, aside from lighting, shadows, and water, looks relatively like the Java client, including or excluding draw distance, the NXT client has all the features of every modern game that you play on your computer. So that kind of stuff is possible in the new client. It's just JAX hasn't had the need, nor would it fit with the look of RuneScape currently. So there's lots of options going forward here.
Mm-hmm.
They also added an option for enabling anisotropic filtering. And you guys are probably wondering, what the heck is anisotropic filtering? Well, basically what this is it's a way of making textures viewed on a plane other than the way the camera is currently facing. So imagine your camera is currently facing forward. Now, when you do that, a texture is flat. When you import a texture into a game, it's flat. It's a 2D thing that gets mapped around an object. So what anisotropic filtering does is it takes that skewed image of that texture when you're looking down a plane in a 3D world and makes it a higher quality than if it didn't have anisotropic filtering enabled. So basically, it's a way to, for example, have a set of tiles on the ground look higher resolution when you're looking at it from a non-normal plane. If that makes
interesting.
Sense. Yeah. Was that explanation good? Did you guys get that, I think?
Yeah.
Okay. It's one of those options that's going to be in the NXT client that people might not understand off the bat, kind of like ambient occlusion. So definitely lots of high-tech little video game nuggets in there that you can play around with and see how that works for your settings. And finally, an issue where trees on the minimap could cause some parts in the minimap to become transparent have been fixed. I've noticed this in a few areas, so that's definitely nice to see. So that's all I got for the patch notes, unless you guys want to mention anything else.
I think that covers it.
Good, Mr. Bistro?
That's good.
Okay. Well, as I said, we did open some old wounds earlier with the Power to the Players poll about holiday items, the discussion about EOC and the community police. I have to open another wound right now, and that is the in-game voting system has been used once again this week, this time to poll us for our favorite updates of 2016. So, favorite updates of 2016. This doesn't make sense to me for one reason, and that is that we do not have the release of Sliskay's endgame yet into game, which could very well be the best quest of all time, yet we're not going to have an option to choose it on this list here, which, I mean...
And it's probably not going to be that good.
Sure, I think it will be.
No, I'm sure it will be amazing.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to tell everyone to strap in while I go through some of these options here. So, in first place for 2016's favorite update is, believe it or not, here we go, the NXT client. I did not anticipate this to be that high. This has 19.4K votes. Second place, this one really shocked me, but I mean, I guess it doesn't really surprise me. Skilling Pets, 12.7K votes. Third place. Anyone want to guess what third is?
Invention.
There you go. Invention. 12.2K votes. Following that, God Wars Dungeon number 2 with 11.4K votes. And then after that, things begin to drop off quite substantially. We see the Ark and Telos are roughly tied together in terms of... Telos and the Falador Massacre are roughly tied together with in relation to performance, and the rest, it's kind of a mishmash everywhere. The 15-year anniversary event only got 6,000 votes, which, I mean, it wasn't a huge event, but it was huge in the grand scheme of RuneScape. Sliske and the Chocolate Factory, 809 votes. I'm actually happy this is in this position here, because I don't know about you guys, but that song that they did for this update, it was just kind of disturbing. So I'm glad this was relegated to this position in the list.
Oh boy.
Unfortunately, Nomad's Elegy, as well as the River of Blood and Kindred Spirits and the Gower Quest, as well as Children of Ma, have all been relegated to single percentage points of the quest this year. Children of Ma had the highest with 4,072 votes. Gower Quest, 2,105. Kindred Spirits, only 550. River of Blood, 2,413 at the time of taking this. And this is going to be in-game for 5 more days, this poll. So, what do you guys think? What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Actually, after I voted, I didn't realize that I could vote for more than one. So I quickly backed out and redid it. But my top three, as ironic as it is, were actually the top three that made it. My order was Invention, NXT, then Invention, then Skilling Pets. So I was pleased, because I feel like all of the updates that I enjoy, especially from years past, seem to have been in the minority. So it's kind of odd that this year everybody was kind of in line with what I enjoyed as well. So it was kind of cool. And it was funny, because the other day when I logged on, I got the notification of, oh, there's a new poll. And I got really excited. And then I was like, oh, this is what we've already got, not what we're going to get. So anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. But
I'm in the minority this year. I voted for NXT, of course. I also voted for River of Blood and the Gower Quest. I also wanted to throw Kindred Spirits in there, but I wasn't able to because you can only choose three. I also wanted to throw Children of Mine as well. But, you know, you can only choose three. So I chose the three that I thought were perhaps most impactful. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's surprising, but quests in such a low rung, I'm not sure I came to expect that.
If you put all the quests together.
Well, I mean, you could do that, but how do you compare the Gower quest with River of Blood? They're two different toned quests. You really can't. So, now, what did you vote for, Mr. Bistro?
I voted for God Wars Dungeon 2, the NXT game client, and Bounty Hunter, which is sitting in second to last place.
Oops, like, Bounty Hunter.
The other option had more votes than Bounty Hunter, which is depressing.
All right. So why are Skilling Pets in second place right now?
I don't know.
Dave, you voted for them. Tell us why.
I like this, even though I haven't got one yet. But you know, we've touched on this before, where it's sort of you know, bringing the community away from just boss combat, slayer boss. You know, you can do random stuff with skills, and you can still be awarded these pets, and there are more than you think. Pet collectors out there, obviously everybody that's gone for the final boss, insane final boss, or, you know, just have gotten bored with most of the content, you know, they go for pets, and it's a pretty big deal when, you know, somebody gets a skilling pet by just by doing stuff, and some of them are cheeky and some of them are just odd.
I got a really funny story about that I'll tell later.
Oh boy. But yeah, I just think it's nice. It's sort of giving the skillers some love, as everyone remembers, I'm sure. You know, Invention was pretty much released as a you know, a combat-oriented skill, basically a supplement to Slayer.
And not to mention we didn't get half the things we were promised with it.
Right, and then, you know, a couple months later, you know, they're like, oh yeah, here's the skilling stuff. So, you know, unfortunately, that's kind of how, you know, the game and the community has been. You know, it's combat first, and I guess we'll slip some, you know, skilling stuff in. But, you know, as we're seeing with, you know, the development of the mining and smithing rework, they're sort of, they're bringing the balance back to the game of, you know, being able to, you know, make a competitive income to as if you were to just do Slayer or bossing. And I think... you know, adding in the little rewards such as pets to skilling is, you know, a step in the right direction. And, you know, I think it was mentioned that, you know, they'll be adding titles sometime for skills and stuff like that. So I voted for it mostly because, like I said, it's a step in the right direction. And I think it needs to be recognized for that and not be, you know, sort of lost in, you know, ooh, God Wars 2, you know, because then they're going to be like, ooh, that did good. Let's do God Wars 3, God Wars 4. And they'll keep focusing on the combat aspect when I still think there needs to be some balancing between the two disciplines. So,
All right. I guess you voted for it then, in a sense, to evangelize skilling, which is something that doesn't really happen. All right, that's fair. And you know, my biggest beef with skilling pets is just that they're there, and you know, well, just wait. Let me just wait that they're there, and there's so many opportunities, you know, with the prestige system and skilling pets that were talked about in the Summer Summit that really never came to fruition with skilling pets. And lo and behold, instead, you know, a week after that stream, we hear, oh, we're putting skilling pets into game in August because you guys wanted them so badly.
So you sort of feel like it's more of they released a you know, go figure, a shell of something when they could have definitely filled it out a lot more and sort of, you know, fed it through a couple different...
Well, yeah. I mean, I think part of the reason that they didn't do that and they just put them in is because of the immediate reaction from the community, which, I mean, isn't always the best way to go because we saw... What we've seen so many times, what happens when you have an update that isn't explained properly and the players don't get it, and why, and then what kind of a toxic thing that becomes. It happened with EOC for parts of the community. It happened with the prestige system. So you can't even talk about a prestige system or sucking stuff away or sucking XP away without evoking some of these feelings. And I think that that is ultimately some of the knee-jerk reaction that's there that caused the skilling pets to come out not even, you know, 8 weeks after that stream happened. So it's just something that could have been fleshed out more, and they could have done it, you know, without sucking all the oxygen out of the prestige system and instead make it so that your character sucks XP out of your skills and puts them in a skilling pet and does something great with them. And, you know, that wasn't the initial design for prestige, and it's something that Jagex suggested, and it went nowhere. So, okay. Then there's also another elephant in this poll here, and that's the ARC, 5,500 votes. We've got a question about this after, but, I mean, it kind of shows the impact of the ARC when it is in, it's not in your top three, but it was, you know, chosen as one of the player updates of the year, and kind of will ask, there will be questions to be had about should we have had this kind of update decided by the players. That's something Jagex is probably thinking to themselves. So... and then, of course, I guess we could talk a bit about Bounty Hunter, Mr. Bistro. 685 votes, bottom, very, very end. It's above Kindred Spirits.
Yeah, it's... I was so excited when this came out and to see all the people, like, out and about in the wilderness was super refreshing. And I should have known that it was going to be just one other thing that kind of drops off. And I'd almost be willing to say that a good majority of those votes are coming from people that are playing in Legacy mode over EOC too.
Yeah, I think PvP was always more popular in Legacy mode. And, I mean, you just kind of look at the numbers here. The numbers speak for themselves. The Canthropy graphical rework got more votes than Bounty Hunter. Got more votes than Kindred Spirits. So,
I mean, I like the Catherby rework too, but I wasn't going to vote for it.
So, I don't know. I don't want to say I feel like there's a disconnect between various aspects of the RS community, but it certainly feels that way with everything in this poll being so focused on the endgame perspective here. Except for the NXT client, which is a major quality of life update. Because you have, like, Invention, God Wars Dungeon 2, and Skilling Pets. That's all heavily focused on endgame, and that is clearly where the players are at. But I think we do lose some kind of appreciation for the other updates on this list. And, I mean, maybe it's just that these were so massive in scope that, you know, there was no time to go back to these other updates and give them a vote, right? So, I don't know. Talos the Warden, that's also pretty low on the list as well, even though it's kind of loosely associated with God Wars Dungeon 2. You think that boss was too hard for people, being so low?
No, I think the mechanics on how you get your drops were a little bit different, maybe not received as well.
All right. Falador Massacre event, that scored relatively well, 1,300 votes. You know, we didn't really feel well about that when that came out, because that was kind of glorifying a bug abuser. But it kind of did go with the year's theme of looking back. So, and, I mean, I'm going to say this right now with my votes, and I saw the numbers come in. It's like, oh, I'm a part of the minority here who voted for these quests, and, you know, it kind of doesn't, it feels like I don't know the community that is voting for these. I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but that's the sense I got when I submitted my vote.
Yeah, I, you know, even though we had different perspectives, I think I still sort of took that away because I was so used to, you know, not being with the community, and this time I was. So, you know, it was sort of that same feeling of maybe I don't know the community because, you know, all the stuff that I usually like, obviously, you know, I was just very surprised to see a skilling update that was fairly just small in terms of, you know, development time and whatnot, you know, score so high on the list. So, yeah, I agree. If there's one thing that the RuneScape community is good at, it's throwing everyone for a loop, including themselves.
Yeah. So. I mean, I just can't fathom that the arc chosen by the players is so low, especially after all these fixes here. And after the amount of XP that you could wring out of an optimal island is insane. So, I don't know. Jagex is going to take stock of this poll, and hopefully that'll influence 2017 to shift some of these updates up next year. So I think it's good that this poll is here. We'll have to see what the final results are next week, but call me shocked. I feel like I'm part of the minority.
Yep.
All right. Anything else with this poll before we move on to the questions?
I don't believe so.
All righty then. Well, let us begin. We got our first question this week. It's an audio question from Parnassius.
Hi guys, Parnassius once again. My question this week is about the Ark. The devs said that it was going to have its own economy, which it certainly does, but it is very limited. Do you think they should introduce more stuff to buy with chimes that are useful in the overall game? For example, we saw a few scrimshaws that were dropped from the Mimic boss that would fit perfectly with the Ark, and they are pretty useful, you know, they have to do with slaying and such, so really handy ones. Do you think these would be a good item, and others similar that a player could buy only from traders in the Ark that they could use to keep them coming back to train and gather chimes, since once you have unlocked everything, there's really no point in returning? They spent 6 months developing this part of the game, and to just get a few weeks real play before unlocking everything seems a huge waste of resources to me. What do you guys think? Thanks for your discussion in advance, and I'd like to wish you and all your listeners a very Merry Christmas and a happy and safe New Year.
Well, here we are. I mean, we were just talking about this, the Ark polling low at the very bottom of the poll. And as Parnassius said, and as we said, you know, 6 months development time for an update chosen by the players. And Parnassius adds on, you know, most people were finished this within 2-3 weeks. And you end up with a piece of content that is lacking players. So, thoughts on the closed economy and maybe having more benefits that we can have in game. So let's start with you, Mr. Bistro.
Yeah.
Dave, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm going to go ahead and dive in on this, pun intended, because I'm actually there right now. Yes, to answer your question, I think there, of course, there's always room for improvement, especially with, you know, RuneScape updates, not to discount, you know, things in the past. But yeah, I definitely think there could be more, you know, rewards in the arc to bring people back, because it really is. It's, you know, 2-3 weeks when you're done. I can tell you with utmost confidence, as soon as I, you know, get my last few unlocks here, I will be done and I probably will not be back, because I've been here for, you know, a solid 2 weeks and I'm literally just doing this for the, you know, trim completionist requirement. And then I will be done because nothing really, you know, grabs my attention in terms of, you know, outside of the required, you know, items to check off the list. Dare I say they could add some consumables like we saw with, you know, the RuneSpan and having the massive pouches, something that, you know, degrades in a fairly short amount of time, which would require people to come back and, you know, participate in, you know, making soups and, you know, getting chimes and stuff like that, to sort of supplement either skills or combat, you know, maybe a certain specific type of potion or a boost that would, you know, sort of bring the relevance of this update, you know, bring it up, obviously, or, you know, tie it in with ports a little bit more. It still feels a little disconnected from, you know, kind of the thing that invented this part of content. Is that was really worded very weird. But yeah, I definitely think there's room for improvement in terms of rewards, because in a sense, it really does just feel like Dimension of Disaster, where it's just kind of like a grind inside of its own little thing. And once you get all the rewards, you know, you kind of leave and you don't really come back because it's not really a part of the surface world. So anyway, those are my thoughts. And I think that whether it be consumable or just a few more scrimshaws or pieces of equipment, I definitely think there's room there for improvement. So,
I mean, we completed the three, the piece sets on the tier 85 tank armor from ports, so there's that. But beyond that, there's not much you can take out of it. So,
no.
I think you guys all hit the nail on the head. What do you think, Mr. Bistro?
I think that they should vastly expand on the things that you can take out. It should be a much larger economy than it currently is, especially if it's going to be separate, because if there's just that few of items, then can you really call it a separate economy, or can you call it like a reward shop?
Like a mini game, yeah.
Yeah, like Dungeoneering. It just makes me think a little bit about like Dungeoneering rewards or unlocking the potions from Perif, you know. And I feel like those would help, but there just needs to be a big enough mass of items to actually be able to call it an economy in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I was, you know, partially thinking when the Ark came out, it would be great to maybe have a focus set on some of these skills. I mean, we have Herblore and stuff that is done in the Ark, which is one thing. I mean, we have Rocktail Soup. Why not bring out Shark Soup into the real world and have that be something you can sell for GP or chimes, or maybe have it be an unlock that you can do. So there's reason to get the components from ports to make, or from the Ark to make that happen. Another thing that you could do, have a whole new set of potions. I mean, you could get the potion ingredients from the Ark. We already have mushrooms. We already have all the berries. And, you know, the berries reek of the bird's eggs. The bird's eggs sat in our banks for all these years, and then they were finally used when summoning came out. I mean, what use are the berries you get from the Ark right now, aside from breeding berries, which is practically like breeding Pokemon, I'll say again. So I think that if they had focused instead on the port skilling side of things and had that tie into the reward, that definitely would have made a reason to keep coming back and get these rare materials there, because I think there's a segment of the player-based population that does like building their own items and not necessarily training through just, you know, I'm going to buy 50,000 blue dragon hides on the Grand Exchange and then make them into dragon hide tops and then call it a day for crafting XP. There are people who do that, but there are people who also like to gather their stuff from the game, make consumables and whatnot, and then sell them off for a price. And then in doing that, earn XP and GP along the way. And I think it could have been a good way to reinvigorate some of the skills that were talked about that we did back in our summer, the SOS, State of Skills podcast. So the Ark would have been a fantastic opportunity for that, because when you think about it, there's 9 skills involved in player-owned ports. So you can definitely tie those in to the Ark and then tie those in as well to the game main game economy and fix things. And just because it means a whole new economy doesn't mean that you're going to be spending GP on it. You're going to be spending your Ark components. So I think they could have done that. But at the same time, you can see where the problem arises, because if you did this, what would you get? You would get GP out of them. But at the same time, I think they wanted a place where you could make, where you could go to the Ark and not necessarily, you know, just have it as a way to make easy money right off the bat. So I think that's probably why they didn't do that. But at the same time, that's what it needed to encourage people to keep coming back, because that's what, if you look at the most popular updates in game, that's how they keep people coming back. So, and, you know, the fact it was voted so low on this list proves that, as you said, Dave, it's basically a comp requirement at this point, right? Unless you're going there for a specific reason. You know, all the birds and whatnot. It's probably seldom known if you haven't gone to the Ark yet, but you can unlock a gnome glider by finding one of the castaways to go to the Ark. So you don't need to take your boat. You can just go straight gnome gliding there. So there's lots of little things like that. And I mean, if it had expanded out to the main game, then perhaps we would have seen more like that. But at the same time, that would have also expanded on development time. So maybe it was a case of things being inefficient. We'd have to ask Sirion about that. So I don't know. It is something that is, I don't want to say disturbing, but it is something that is troubling for the updates of 2016, the way the ball kind of bounced and what we got. So I don't know. I don't think there's anything else we can do to make it better at this point, aside from, or that would not make it really overpowered. I don't know if that's a statement you guys agree with or not.
Yeah, I mean, adding rewards to it, unless you add a significant amount of rewards or a system to which those rewards revolve around, it's basically going to be, you know, expanding an activity rather than expanding an economy. And you have to be careful, because then you get into a thing, is this going to be like dungeoneering, where it's just like there's everything is, you know, they're releasing all skills again, but with like different components.
Very good point.
I mean, there's a fine line between there, and I think it was a little generous for them to want it to be its own economy. I think lore-wise, that's what they were going for, but gameplay-wise is really just not feasible, because with a different economy, you pretty much have to have a different game, and that really doesn't work. So, you know, they can only expand on it so far before it becomes something other than it is, and then, again, that cuts into development time. With what they could be doing down the road. And I think it really is just where it's at. Should they and could they add a few scrimshaws from the mimic boss and whatnot? Of course. I don't think that's going to remedy the situation at hand, though. So, I mean, again, beating a dead horse, it is what it is. So all we can do is move forward, and hopefully they don't do it again.
The really odd thing about this is that if you did do this the way we want, way we're talking about this going right now, this would be very similar to a potential design of the Dungeoneering skill minus the dungeon, mm-hmm. where you have, you know, say random dungeons throughout RuneScape that you could find and plunder and then get Dungeoneering XP from and maybe some rewards and Dungeoneering points. So this is all then contained in the arc, and then you basically have two copies of the same similar mechanic
going on.
Right,
just for reskin.
With a reskin. So, you know, that's actually a very good point. The arc is Dungeoneering, except on islands rather than dungeons.
Oh, and Shane likes it.
Well, there's a big difference about the reason why I like it, and that's because I don't need to go there with people who might mm-hmm. have, you know, a misaligned team interest, right?
Through the transitive property, Shane likes Dungeoneering.
Oh, gosh, don't you bring that kind of logic in here.
And I mean, speaking of Dungeoneering and how they made it a quote skill, you know, it's very, very surprising because, in my opinion, with their idea of, you know, I guess a skill, they could have incorporated the arc, expanded on it a little bit more, and then lumped ports in with it, and that could have been sailing. Like, I feel like that was kind of what they had envisioned for sailing, but they broke it up. I mean, let's be honest. Could you not see, oh, you know, it'd be like something like farming. Oh, I got to go, you know, send my ships out for the day. You know, you get like a 30K drop for sending out a long voyage, stuff like that. You know, going to each island and exhausting
then the
all the resources
is the
gives a drop.
The actual island exploration like, part.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
but
sailing.
Anyway. I'm going to get all kinds of hate mail and death threats now for saying that because, you know, if Jagex listens, oh, we heard this idea from... I'm just going to delete my account. Oh, boy. But, yeah. Anyway, so...
I think
that's pretty much it on that.
Yes. Okay. So, our next question is from Thieves. Hey, guys. If Jagex decided to pull a Blizzard and wanted to release a fictional RuneScape movie, what storyline would you like to see up on the big screen? Would you prefer it to be live action, 3D, or animated? Like, you need to make 6 movies about this, but I could definitely say it would be the entire Majora's quest line.
Yeah, I was going to say Majora's right or the just the whole elf quest line all the way from Plague City up
good.
To
But that would be kind of slow, I think. There's not that much action in those series, right?
Yeah, that's true. But in the true Hollywood fashion, you got to skew from it, and you got to make at least a trilogy. Got to string it out.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't know.
They could stick to the easy path and just do the Betrayal at Falador.
They could.
It's already written.
And, I mean, I have not read that, but apparently people who have read that do indeed like it and say it is consistent with RuneScape lore. And, you know, a really interesting thing in that, you know, not many people think of is that in that book it took a person days to walk from Falador or to Varrock. So that would be an interesting aspect to explore there. But, you know, aside from the Majora's, I think if you were doing it at this point and specifically where we're at in this point in RS history, you could definitely do it with the entire Six Age storyline, starting with the World Wakes. You'd probably need to do it in about 3 movies, but you could probably get that done. So,
yeah, I think all of the god lore that we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years fits, I think, the archetype of where a lot of the fantasy movies are and are going, and, you know, holds a lot of action and really is extremely rich in lore. Even though I'm not a lore hound, everyone knows that. You know, I think it's very good storytelling, and it's, you know, it sort of adds that higher power sort of fantasy aspect that people like. And in terms of what I would like it would obviously have to be live action, I think, for it to really have that effect. Otherwise, you sort of get that Pixar kiddie feeling, especially with a game that I feel like so many people associate being a kid's game. I think Warcraft did that very well in making, you know, live action and not doing like a CGI type production. I think the live action really brought it to life and brought it to the audiences that even didn't like Warcraft. It was like, oh, this is still a good movie because, you know, it's not cartoony and it still has those, you know, aspects to the film. So
has Pixar made a movie for adults yet?
Yes.
It's animated?
Well, I don't think it's actually Pixar, but it's the same like animation style.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it called?
Sausage Party.
Oh, okay.
You're kidding. They made that?
No. They did not make that. I was saying it's not Pixar, but it's that same style of like DreamWorks Pixar, like the CGI sort of. You'd think it would be a cartoon, and then you watch the trailer, and they drop the F-bomb 3 times. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. So.
All right. Yeah, that I was surprised, so I'm glad I heard that wrong. I think that a good story that they could do is the vampire one.
Oh, that would be good, because that, you know, I think that's nice and contrite, and they could do a movie on each one. It would probably take a decade, but, mm-hmm. you know, there you go.
Well, I don't think they would even need to do a movie on each one, but there's enough story to go back where they could even go all the way back to
that was really deep
Hallowed Lands
too.
And
yes.
just build up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
That would work well, I think. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I think that if you are looking at things, you have Majorat, Six Age, and Vampires is probably the deepest lore in the game. You know, we've wanted to go deeper on the gnomes and whatnot, but I don't think that would really lend itself to a movie. The elves is just there. So I think there's 3 good options right there. And, you know, live action would probably be the best way, following that from 3D, but definitely not animated. Because I think that if you did animated, that, I mean, I don't know. I personally don't think that would sell.
No, I mean, if you did animated, it would really just feel like somebody put a voice to, like, all the fan-made comics, you know, around the community. And it would just seem sort of, I mean, for lack of a better term, just too cartoony. You know, you couldn't really take it seriously. And it would not, I guarantee you, it would not pull in people from outside of the community and sort of, you know, pitch the idea of the game and the lore within. You can't really portray that across, you know, in a cartoon type thing.
Yeah, so. And if you did it with 3D as well, I mean, I think that would fit well with the way RuneScape is, but it wouldn't necessarily expand out beyond that, unless for some reason those kind of 3D animated movies like the Sausage Party one you mentioned do become mainstream. So at the same time, I could totally imagine there being a movie called, you know, the Lord of Vampirium, something, something, something. So I think that would work really well. All right. That was great. Anything else left on that one?
Nope.
Oh, I don't think so.
All right. Well, if you guys want to send us in questions, you guys know how to do that. Email them to questions@rsbnb.com. Or leave us a voicemail at the Google Voice number, or text message can go there as well. That's 571-57-BNB, 571-572-2632. All right, moving on to tech news. A couple of interesting tech news stories this week. You guys remember Pandora?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, this goes way back to one of the first services that offered streaming music online before that was the way of the future, so to speak. Pandora was basically the first service where it would try and tell you what you wanted to listen to. You'd enter in your favorite songs, and it would create radio stations for you. Pandora is rumored to be launching a Spotify competitor next year, and it will be called Pandora Premium, and it is going to be lightly based off the service they bought last year called Ardio, and its chief competitors will, of course, be Apple Music and Spotify. So basically, this will be a competitor to both of those, with the exception of the Pandora factor, which is that it will use your listening history and likes in order to suggest similar music that you might be interested in. And of course, for anyone who has used Pandora before, you will know that is precisely what Pandora's claim to fame was, is that it would basically categorize each musical song based on its attributes and then suggest things that sounded similar or had a similar tone to them to kind of introduce you to new things. And I don't know about you guys, but I remember always hearing about Pandora. And Pandora was the thing you would use if you were looking for new things to be interested in. So it'll be interesting to see how successful they ultimately are with this, which going up against the huge juggernaut of Spotify. So
I think that Pandora might be doomed to fail in this situation. First of all, because of their name that they decide to go with. Like Pandora Premium or Spotify.
Just there's Spotify Premium as well.
Yeah, but no one says Spotify Premium. They just say Spotify. And when someone's going to say Pandora, for all of us who've used Pandora in the past, we might immediately assume, oh, like streaming like radio stations of recommended music that you might like. So I think that it's got to get past its name a little bit to be more of a streaming like service.
So this competitor is going to be on demand, correct? Where you can like search for a song
That's
and
right.
just play it on demand. That's going right. to be their competition with Spotify.
Yep.
Okay. My initial thoughts, and I really don't think there's too much more reading into this, is obviously Spotify has been doing that, obviously, for, you know, they were one of the pioneers in the whole on-demand thing. And then, you know, RDO was kind of in the shadow of them. So Pandora bought them, and then they're going to try to compete with Spotify. And what I'm going to say is the only way they're going to even be able to compete with Spotify is a lower price. Other than that, I guarantee you Spotify users will not be like, oh, I'm going to go use Pandora Premium now, because that's not going to happen. The only thing is if they're significantly cheaper and their library is significantly larger, because the social aspect of Spotify, being able to share music, see what your friends are listening to, share playlists, stuff like that, I think outweighs pretty much every other service, obviously. And I've been paying for Spotify for, I think, a little over 2 years now. And, you know, it's basically my Netflix. You know, I don't pay for Netflix mm-hmm. because I'm not a big movie person. I pay for Spotify. So Spotify is my Netflix. And a lot of people feel that way. They have it linked to their Facebook, you know, all their social, you know, sites. Yeah, I mean, that's just the bottom line. You are not going to get Spotify customers to switch to Pandora Premium unless you have a significantly better price. Sure, you will pick up people that have only used Pandora and haven't, you know, decided to venture out and try Spotify because, you know, they've always used Pandora and it's like, oh, okay, oh, this is cool. You know, you'll get your loyal Pandora customers, but you're not really going to get any Spotify customers. So
yeah, and
that's
my opinion. How much lower can the price per month really go for these services? Spotify is already
isn't
like
Spotify $9.99
by the music industry?
Yeah, you really can't go. I mean, below $10, because still $10. I mean, you need hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of, you know, listens per month to, you know, at least pull like $10 out of your contract with Spotify. You know, as mathematics mm-hmm. would prove, if you have a million users that are paying $10 a month, that's $10 million a month. And, you know, there's, let's say, 3.6 trillion list, you know, plays per month, you know, each listen, you would have to get hundreds upon thousands of views to pull a dollar out of those coffers.
And that's before you factor in hard costs like mm-hmm. bandwidth.
Right.
There's also the issue that if you go to Pandora and you're not a resident, or your internet is not coming from the US, Australia, or New Zealand, you get put up to a restricted page where it doesn't exist in the country. So they don't even have deals to play stuff outside of the US, Australia, and New Zealand right now.
Right. Yeah, coming from a musician standpoint and knowing how the music industry works, yes, Spotify really does sort of kind of screw the artist, but, you know, one can put the argument as, you know, the artist sort of signs that away when they go on to a label, because in essence, when you are signed to a label, you pretty much give them the profits and, you know, as the artist, you don't pull all that money from record sales. Most of that goes to your label and then, you know, you're paid for making that release. So it's the same concept, just on a much bigger scale. So basically, the record companies are getting screwed because people are streaming and they're getting, you know, the pennies on the dollar for the streams, which obviously trickles down to the artist not getting that much money because their, you know, their records aren't physically selling for $12 a pop,
right,
or what have you. So yes,
and it's, in you terms, can't do it's,
a, I'm surprised they haven't taken it down.
Yeah,
with all the
and you
DMCA
can't do a race
like
to the bottom for this like you did for the App Store or for the purchase of individual tracks. You can't do a race to the bottom for that, I don't think. Like you said, it's not going to go any lower. So there's no competitive aspect right there.
Right. So. And, you know, while both services and most all streaming services offer that, you know, recommended list of artists and stuff, there's probably – I think I'm generous
Is it
in
any
saying
good?
That well, yeah. I think I'm generous in saying that, you know, only about 10% of the music that's on Spotify actually pulls money that's worth pulling from those coffers without, you know, because, you know, there's obviously the fees and the transfer, stuff
right,
like that. You know, you're not going to go to the trouble to withdraw $3.72 because, you know, all these little guys that are on there aren't on there to make money because the fact of the matter is they're not making money. They're just getting exposure.
So
which.
So basically what you're trying to say is that unless it can become huge, there's no way for it to really be successful because it's going to have to be at a lower price. So it's going to need to have as many users or more as Spotify to be able to send the money out that it needs to.
Right.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess then they're going to be on their namesake of opening a Pandora's box and and relying on their past success of telling people what to listen to. So,
I think it's a bad decision.
Yeah, and here's why it's also a bad decision going forward. We're entering a stage of applications and whatnot where the idea of machine learning and compute time that you need to run things based on machine learning is getting so inexpensive that anyone from Apple to Spotify could hire the right engineers and build a machine learning algorithm to source music that people like to listen to and then run it on servers. That's the way things are going. And it's not something that is going to be easily sellable going forward because lots of people are going to be able to do it. So we'll just have to wait and see. But something that is indeed selling is the Apple Watch, believe it or not. Our next piece of tech news relates to the Apple Watch and the record that the device actually set in the Thanksgiving/Black Friday holiday weekend. Apparently, during this weekend, the sales of the Apple Watch set a record high, and that will make this quarter the best ever for the product. Direct words out of Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, saying that. And basically what this means is that the gadget sell-through rate, that is how many are actually sold to the consumers, rather than, you know, just how many are on the stocks, are actually moving. So the product is actually moving, which is something that is entirely new for this category of device and this device from Apple. And, you know, this is way up from when it was estimated, because there have been no actual reportings on how many were sold. It was estimated that there were 1.1 million units of the watch sold during the third quarter of 2016, down 71% from the year ago quarter, same time last year. So the fact that they set a record for the amount of sales, I think, is showing that people might be warming up to this kind of device, or that Apple finally hit the right price point on this.
How much was the price point reduction?
They reduced it $100 this past spring.
So it's currently sitting at around
$299 US. For the base entry model. And they also did update them at this year's iPhone event to have the new CPU in them and ultimately use less battery. So if you buy an Apple Watch now, you're getting a much better device than you would have if you purchased them this spring at the $100 price cut. So it's either it's at a right price point or people are finally warming up to an advanced wearable, because the vast traction in the wearable market has actually been from companies that run cheaper, like Fitbit primarily. So
I think it's a healthy combination of both, to be completely honest. I think they hit the sweet spot, and when people are starting to warm up to such devices, I know VR has seen quite a spike, you know, this year, just with, I think, people accepting that and sort of, you know, warming up to that is, you know, okay, well, let's take, what else is there? Oh, Apple Watch. Oh, they reduce the price? Okay. I think they're playing off each other, and I think, you know, it's just really been a combination of timing with both of them. So
yeah, I was actually wrong about the price. $269 US for the base model in the US, if you just want the standard sport band with the aluminum casing. So, and that's a huge improvement from what was initially $399. So
yeah.
You know, it still, of course, asks the question of where does this fit? And, you know, there hasn't necessarily been a killer use case for this yet, but it kind of does show going forward that the market is indeed prone for change, kind of like what you said relating to VR. So we'll have to see what happens in 2017 with this. But, you know, this past summer, it wasn't entirely out there, but there was some thinking that the entire wearable market, at least the premium wearable market, would disappear. And those are some of the indications that we got last week. It was a contender for last week's tech news, but Motorola announced that they will not be doing a new Android Wear device in 2017 because of low demand. So Who knows? This might actually spur them to compete going forward, unless, you know, we're on a 2-year cycle for these kind of wearables. Because when you ask yourself, I mean, who wants to replace a watch every 2 years? That's something you do for a smartphone. Typically, you get a good watch and it lasts for a long time. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait and see. And who knows, maybe someone will finally come up with an application that everyone just has to have with these devices.
I don't think there can be a high-end like market for things until it's well established. So I guess with the price coming down that significantly, it's not as surprising as I originally thought.
Yeah. All right. Well, then, moving on to our final piece of tech news, we're going to talk a little bit about Windows 10 once again. Microsoft making some waves in China, discussing the future of Windows 10 and its ARM architecture support. ARM is the architecture that runs all our smartphones. x86 runs our desktop computers. And the applications that run on an ARM architecture, your smartphone and your desktop, are incompatible normally. So it's a huge story when Microsoft talks about its version of Windows 10 that already runs on ARM and has since the very beginning, being able to run x86 applications on an ARM-based Windows 10 device. They tried something similar to this when Windows 8 first shipped, but it was highly limited in terms of the applications that were available, largely due to the uptake of Windows 8. But ARM-based Windows 10 devices have seen some improvement. And while, you know, it's not necessarily the main thing we want to talk about today, the fact that there's going to be some support for x86 applications on ARM-based Windows 10 devices, i.e. smartphones, this does point towards a future in which Microsoft will probably be publishing a device next year that runs on ARM and encourages everyone to use Windows 10 standard applications on it, and the rumored form factor for this would be the upcoming Microsoft Surface phone. So basically,
by Nokia?
Well, maybe by Nokia, or it could be by someone else. I think it would have to be by someone else to really, you know, have a true chance at succeeding. Someone who can manufacture volume and someone who can manufacture high quality. But just imagine a Windows 10 phone that has a strong enough CPU in it that you can connect it to a 1080p display, do work in Photoshop and Microsoft Office on it, disconnect, and then it just serves as your standard mobile computing device. That's what Microsoft is looking at in 2017 with this announcement. Which, when you compare it to Apple's mobile strategy, or Google's for that matter, is entirely different. So, I'm really interested to see what Microsoft will do about this, and it could be their chance to kind of shake up their corner of the mobile market and maybe get some more users over towards their platform. So, that's good, that's what I'd like to see.
I don't know. I've been hearing a lot of like innovating stuff coming from Microsoft.
Definitely reforming
themselves in a way that I would not have expected a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, I've long maintained that Microsoft has a superior technical vision of the way they want things to go and what they think we should all be doing in, you know, 5 or 10 years' time. And it's often the case that, yeah, they have the research to back this up, but they don't actually have the implementation that normally falls to Apple, because Microsoft is, of course, well known for its Windows operating system, Microsoft Office, and all of the enterprise software they provide. Not really a consumer-facing company aside from Windows and Office, which is unfortunate because they got lots of great stuff going forward with the Surface line and their HoloLens VR technology. So just when you see the way they want to go with this with one platform, it kind of makes sense that we're going to see a Surface phone that can do this next year. So just imagine being able to play RuneScape on your phone. Ho ho ho.
The dream.
Yeah, of course the screen would probably be a little bit too small, but hey, it is what it is. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting because Microsoft has been aiming for this for so long, and no one has managed to pull off a cross-platform device that can use all applications seamlessly. So, should be interesting next spring.
It's pretty cool.
Indeed it is. All right. Well, that's it for tech news, unless you guys want to mention anything else.
I think that wraps it up.
Okie dokie. So we do have a skill of the month going on for December. It is the Dungeoneering skill of the month. And oh boy, this is very interesting, isn't it? Mr. Bistro, you're lacking.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about that.
Currently, we have Flash with 2.8 million Dungeoneering experience gain, the RR Man with 2.7, and Parnassius with 2.3. We're about 7 days into December, so it'll be very interesting to see where this goes. We even have Colton here in fourth place with 2.1 million. So everyone here within, you know, a couple of good dungeon runs together here competing for first place. So come on, I want to see everyone keep this up. And, you know, for how much you talk about Dungeoneering, I was expecting you to be in first.
You know, things come up, you get a little bit busy, but I will not be at the bottom for long.
All right, fair enough. We even have Magebit on here, who hosts RS Weekly, currently in place number 5. So apparently he's a big fan of Dungeoneering too, so... lots of Dungeoneering fans here, I see. All right. We also do have this past month's Informer Roundup, which you can find at informer.rsbnb.com. A list of November-based items written, of course, by King Colin that highlights everything that the Informer writers did past month. So you can give that a read at informer.rsbnb.com. All right. So we do have some achievements of the week. You guys ready for these? Mr. Bistro, you want to run through them?
Yes. Okay. First, we have Jesse Pinkman with 120 Dungeoneering on December 5th. And then, Such XP Waste got 99 Mining on December 2nd. Congrats to you both.
Indeed. Congrats. Very interesting name there, Such XP Waste.
Apparently not, if you know.
Yeah, apparently
call
not.
Call me crazy, but apparently not.
That's great. All right. Well, before I take over again for Pick of the Week, I'll say that once again, we do have the forum running for 2016 clips for RSBNB Update Clip Show. So if you're interested in sending us a clip for this past year, just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/clips. Tell us your favorite moment of the show. It could be when we decided that we're in the minority of RuneScape players this year on this week's episode. Just fill the form in. let us know when it was and what was in the clip, and we'll include that on the year's clip show. Also, of course, still taking suggestions for who should host this year's clip show. I do have two of this year's co-hosts on this podcast right now, if that helps you decide. Or if you have another idea entirely, you can fill that in there. But that is something that we can definitely talk about. Who should host the 2016 clip show?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, pick of the week time. Neither of you guys have a pick of the week, correct?
No.
All right. Well, I do have one that I can share this week, and it is called darksky.net. So, basically, what this is a website that allows you to see the weather that is around you currently. They have web apps, and they also have the ability to download applications for iOS and Android. But in the event that you do not want to download an app, you can just head on over to the website, and it'll ask to use your location. And then you can get some really interesting and useful weather graphics for how things are shaping up around you. So the first thing you're presented with is a huge map of the temperature contours in your area. So with that being said, you can kind of see how cold it is here right now. Then if you click on one of the days below that, it gives you a full day outlook of how it's going to be by just what is a great use of text and line art that really generates a modern-looking weather application that, you know, is just minimal and easy to use. You don't get none of the ads or flash stuff on that you do on weather.com. And if you really want more information, you can find all this on Dark Sky. So it is very in-depth if you want it to be, but at the same time, it can also be very simple for your use. So, you know, while it starts off with temperature, you can get all the way down to pressure and ozone levels. So it is something that can be a power user feature, but at its core, it's very simple to use. And they also have a neat little time machine feature where you can go back in time. So if you wanted to see what it was like in the middle of summer, you can do that and just see how much different the temperature was based on what it is right now in the middle of winter. So you can find this at darksky.net. And it works for all regions of the world, and you can, you know, customize your units as you decide to. So. Also, a great map section, too. You can see the entire temperature map for the whole world, so you can see where it actually starts getting warm on the map and, you know, where the Arctic air masses are and everything like that. So, really neat. Darksky.net.
It is very neat and looks really cool, too.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's definitely something that I think is overlooked because, you know, it's all too often that people just use the default weather app on their phone. And I mean, that's fine because it provides the data, but sometimes you might want to see more. And they do have a huge page here for wind and precipitation and really in depth. So definitely give it a look. Darksky.net. All right. So let's start with what we've been doing, Dave. Since you haven't been on the show in a while, what have you been up to on RS?
Oh, on RS, I'm back with a vengeance. I took a little bit of a break over the summer, but I am back and I'm as strong as ever. Basically going for, I recomped, did a few quests, children them off, stuff like that. But now I am on the long and lonesome road to a trimmed completionist. So I am currently island hopping at the Ark. Hopefully I will be finished with that here in the next couple days. And then I will be at Artisan's Workshop all weekend getting that requirement out of the way with the winter weekend. So
yeah.
If any of you guys are plan on being there, I will hopefully see you guys there. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Just checking off things one by one and, you know, tackling as it comes. So,
all right. Any plans on getting a Master Quest cape?
You know, that'll probably be on the way, honestly. So I got about half the requirements done for that. So yeah, that's definitely definitely in the near future, hopefully. So
neat.
All right. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Well, it may not look it, but I'm working towards 120 Dungeoneering now, and earlier today I hit 500 mil total experience.
Oh boy,
pretty cool for me. Not Dungeoneering, but
yeah, you said total experience.
But, okay, yeah. but other than that, I haven't really got a chance to sit down and do more than like the Christmas event stuff, Little Town at Demonheim, and that is on my to-do list for sure. I want to really get all of those done. Snow Globe, I want that too. So,
all right. Oh, it's currently 30 degrees Celsius in Bangkok, Thailand right now.
All right.
Yeah.
The more you know.
Yeah, and just found out there's actually a 3D map feature here, and that's what I'm playing with right now. All right. Anything else in RS that jumping up and down at you this week, Mr. Bistro?
No, that's about it. I am looking forward to the quest that's coming up, but until then, probably just the Christmas event in Dungeoneering.
Alrighty then. Well, I did say I would have a funny story for you guys later in the podcast, and that time is right now. So, this past weekend, I was harvesting energy at the Divination Colony for, you know, just trying to get some energy to rebuild the GP coffers as Christmas is coming up. And, you know, I was, you know, just, I don't normally AFK, but I was just kind of AFKing, looking at other things in the window. And I come back and I see that Friends Chat is freaking out and Clan Chat is also freaking out. And as it turned out, while I was away in a different window, I actually got the Divination Skilling Pet.
Oh, excellent. That's actually the one that I'm, I would like out of all of them.
Yeah, now you're ready for the real kicker?
Uh-oh.
That it makes everyone laugh and really begin to doubt their luck?
What's that?
I got this after only 823,000 Divination XP. When people have spent millions on trying to get these pets. Millions of XP. Millions, I mean. 30 million to get these. And I just get it at 823. It's like my farming run after two farming runs. So that's two skilling pets I've gotten in under 1 million XP. Now watch me not get another one for another 30 million XP.
One of my clanmates actually got the Herblore pet, and he's level 81 Herblore.
Oh, there you go. And I mean, the odds of getting them do increase as you get more experience. But I mean, it's not a huge amount. But they definitely do increase. And I only have 99 divination, so I was really surprised about that. So that was fun. But aside from that, this week, just you know, some Herblore experience along the way from random things. Also currently working to get 96 cooking to make those shark soups in the Ark. But that's about it. Probably, I think I have enough money in the coffers to be able to pull off what I want at Christmas, so be moving on to other things and reactivating that Herblore project in the next coming week or so, which is super expensive, if anyone hasn't realized, right now for Herblore. So that's my focus currently. But I believe that's about it for RuneScape news right now and other things. So that means that RSBNB update is come to an end, unless there's anything else you guys would like to talk about.
I think that's it.
Okay, then. Well, Dave, thank you for coming back and joining us on the podcast. It was great having you.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Mr. Bistro and I will be back next week to discuss whatever patch notes that Jagex has decided to put out. So until then, enjoy your weekend and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Galaxy Note 7.
See ya.